Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting episode of Source Material. I am your host, Jesse Starcher, and tonight we are discussing another fantastic crossover between DC and who could this be? Is it the Looney Tunes? No, we've done did that. Is it Marvel? Nope. You go back a year or so in the archives, Source Material, you can find Marvel versus DC. No, tonight, DC decides to mess with your childhood just a little bit more and bring in the characters from the Hanna-Barbera universe. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. If you have not had the opportunity to read some of the comics, we actually covered a couple on here, one of which was Flintstones, where DC had brought Flintstones. Mark Russell was the writer of Flintstones, I believe. We had a great discussion in regards to that. Fun property, and Ronnie kept raving about it till I finally brought it on to the Source Material podcast. And that's how history went. But so if you had listened earlier,
don't put that on me, Starcher.
If you'd listened earlier, was it this earlier this year where we brought? Yeah, it was DC and Looney Tunes.
Earlier this year, it was like a month ago.
Okay. Hey, maybe.
It was over the summer.
Maybe.
Jesus.
It was hundreds of hours ago.
That's the truth. So DC and Looney Tunes happened. And the format of that show was where me, Ronnie Adams, Mark Radulich picked our favorite stories or the stories that we...
Ronnie, I will say this. I did enjoy the Batman Elmer Fudd story.
Okay.
I thought it was funny. It was better than I thought it was.
Okay. So we brought those to the table. It wasn't by picking and choosing our favorites, I should say. It was more like, okay, you do this one, you do this one. And we had quite a bevy of them to bring to the table and let one judge, jury, and executioner, Josh Calandros, rule and say, okay, that one sounds like I might be interested. That one I will shat upon. The same thing tonight. We have DC and Hanna-Barbera properties coming together doing a crossover. We chose one each. Mark got two. We're going to present them to Josh Calandros and have him give us his input on what he thinks of said series. So let's get an introduction here. First off, Ronnie Adams, how you doing tonight, man? You ready for this?
Well, yeah.
We already planned to do it.
The excitement pouring forth.
As excited as I could be.
Okay. All right. Well,
no, I'm always excited to be on here. I'm not excited about the material the content that we have on here, and I will leave it at that.
Okay. All right. You prepare your argument, sir. You have to bring your best pitch to Josh Calandros.
Listen, there's no argument. You all will automatically go, oh, God. Why?
Okay. Here's what we got.
And the man, the myth, the legend, the guy that's behind the Radulich and Broadcasting Network, the patriarch himself, Mark Radulich. Are you ready, sir?
I am always ready. I can't wait to pitch my story to Josh Calandros so that he runs right out to his local comic book store and picks it up. That's going to happen. That's my prediction.
Wow. That is that is a prediction. That is some great.
That's a prediction, all right.
No money is being laid. Matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to place your bets right now, you're more than welcome to as we're live here just to figure out which one's going to win.
I've known Josh Calandros for the better of 20 years now. I don't think that's a fair bet for anybody else.
Well, Josh Calandros, I know you're feeling under the weather, but I want to thank you for coming on here to be a judge tonight for our little game that we have, DC and Hanna-Barbera. Are you ready to present your best appearance of impartiality?
I'm ready to give my opinion on these properties I'm not very familiar with.
Okay. Great.
I think there's one character or one team up from each of these respective properties that I've already asked you all that. What is that?
Who is that? Yeah. And that's all right.
Banana splits? I don't understand. I was born in 82. That doesn't work, I don't think.
Yeah, these are the Hanna-Barbera characters have been around for since the 60s. I know we talked about Flintstones, I think, was a prime time cartoon.
Whoa, I just Googled the Banana Splits. Holy shit. Okay, sorry. Shouldn't have done that. Wow, sorry. Go ahead.
That's good.
He's yeah, buddy.
That's definitely from the 60s.
Yeah. Hey, let's see. We have the Flintstones teaming up with Booster Gold tonight, and that's Ronnie's choice. Correct, sir?
Why did I do that?
You sounded like you liked Booster Gold. You're like, yeah, I'll do Booster Gold.
Well, yeah, I do like Booster Gold. And I was like, yeah, okay, I can do some Booster Gold. And then I forgot. Never mind. I'll save it.
Yeah, all right. All right.
Save it.
I was the one that chose the less popular one, or the less, because there were a few options on the table where I was like, okay, that one people are going to know who that is, because not only are they pretty much ingrained in pop culture, you're going to recognize those names. Me, I chose Adam Strange and Johnny Quest. Now, Johnny Quest has been a cartoon since the 60s as well. I'll go into a little bit of that as we go on. And I'll also discuss who the hell Adam Strange is.
I would appreciate that.
Some people, I could understand, myself included, don't know much about that character. So I had to do a little bit of research. And then, Mark Radulich, you had two, because we had four stories altogether, two left over. One was Space Ghost Green Lantern, and then the other was Suicide Squad and Banana Splits. Now, which one are you bringing to the judges' chambers here?
I am going to pitch the winner of this series.
Game's over already.
And that winner is the Suicide Squad and the Banana Splits.
Oh boy.
When we are done with all of our pitches, we can talk about Green Lantern and Space Ghost.
Okay. All right.
So I assume the Banana Splits end up giving the Suicide Squad heaps of acid. I'm just going off of an image. It's kind of where it took me.
these cartoons, I imagine they just were an abundance through the 60s. I would assume animation took off. Like I said, primetime animation was something else. When Flintstones became like one of the number one comedies during that time.
But after the 60s and the 70s, like Hanna-Barbera kind of just went the wayside, really, right?
Well, I mean, we're like, talking. What? Let's look at the properties here. I'll head to Google Machine and do some Hanna-Barbera properties and see what we got. I do know.
I mean, Space Ghost had his fun weirdness in the 2000s, but that, you know, that almost doesn't even borderline on Hanna-Barbera. I mean, I know it was Hanna-Barbera, but like.
Oh yeah, well, yeah, I'll watch a Space Ghost Coast to Coast any day of the week if I can.
Yeah.
That's for damn sure. So I'm looking for properties here. Man, there's a lot of good properties. I could tell you, in my day, when I saw the Hanna-Barbera cartoons, that was on the USA Cartoon Express. I don't know if you guys ever watched USA or had the USA channel. Saturday morning.
I remember that.
Yeah, they had the big like subway train. It was like a train. It was a Cartoon Express, and they would have the Herculoids on.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, they would have the Herculoids on. They would have Yogi Bear. I think Wacky Races was one, or at least a formation of whatever that was, because Wacky Races, I might have gotten confused.
Hanna-Barbera owns the Berenstain Bears, too?
This is terrifying. No wonder.
we'll go down that rabbit hole on a separate episode.
Please let there be a Justice League Berenstain Bears crossover.
but with an A or an E? Which That's universe right. are you from?
That's right. Well, okay. So, yeah, I'm going down through here as well. Dinomutt, Dog Wonder. They had Hong Kong Phooey. And a lot of this has found another life on, what's the name? Boomerang? Is that the name of the show?
Boomerang.
Or they did that
terrible Godzilla cartoon.
Yes.
Magilla Gorilla.
I remember Magilla Gorilla.
I do too. What about Grape Ape?
Oh, Jabberjaw. Yeah. Freaking
Jabberjaws. He's the greatest shark you ever saw.
He was the educationally challenged shark. That's right.
He talked like Curly.
Yeah, it was just like a Curly ripoff.
Jab, 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 Jabberjaws, Jabberjaws. He's the greatest shark you ever saw.
C-Lab 2020. So yeah. That found, you know, well, I love this C-Lab 2021. It
that
found another
way of, yeah.
Well, they did Pound Puppies. I like Pound Puppies when I was a kid. Because I was like 4 years old whenever whenever that came out. So
they had their hand in the Smurfs, I guess, which is interesting. Yeah, they did have Wacky Races was one of them. Yogi Bear.
The Snorks.
Ah, yeah. That was an NBC favorite of mine on Saturday morning. We only got NBC and the Snorks could be shown on there. I think it was like right on after the Gummy Bears.
I actually partly remember the Wheelie and the what is it? And the Chopper Bunch.
Yeah, with the talking car.
This is quickly becoming the nostalgia podcast.
Oh, no, Mark Radulich. Never happens. So let's get the party started.
Coming up next, it's the Banana Splits.
So do many more. Over hill and highway the banana buggies go, coming up to bring you the Banana Splits Show. Making up a mess.
All right, so Mark, you're going to bring your first presentation forward here, and we're talking Suicide Squad and the Banana Splits. First off, Josh, I want to hear, what do you think of those? Okay, you took a look at who the Banana Splits were. Do you have any preconceived notions of what the Suicide Squad is?
Well, yeah. So we were talking about how, like, I don't know a lot about, like, I'm a huge Marvel fan, but like DC, I'm kind of touch and go. And so for Suicide Squad, like, literally, this is really bad. All that I know is the movie.
Ooh.
And yeah. So this is a weird start because that I have that opinion of the movie, which I think is kind of the general opinion of most people of the movie. And then, like, just this image of the Banana Splits that I saw. So let's run with that, I guess.
All right, Mark Radulich, you have the floor, sir.
Now, we all remember my pitch for Wonder Woman and the Tasmanian Devil. I pitched it like a movie. I'm going to stick with that. Okay. Yes, it is a comic book. It is a one shot. It's the Suicide Squad / the Banana Splits. Number one, one shot. But I want you to picture this in your mind's eye like a movie. Josh, I have some questions for you. One, did you see Suicide Squad?
I did. He did says like with curious fear almost. I did.
Did you like Suicide Squad?
I did not.
Of course you didn't. Nobody did. Let's be honest. It's a movie that did well, but nobody liked. And you know, the reason why nobody liked it, for one thing, is it had a really if it had a story at all, it was confusing and stupid. Look, we got to get back to basics with the Suicide Squad, and that's what this story does. What happens here is the Suicide Squad have failed in their most recent mission. They are in disparate places. Some have been captured, and Amanda Waller needs another group to go in and rescue the Suicide Squad. Now let's shift here. Who the hell are the Banana Splits? Well, they're a bubblegum pop rock band. Okay. They're playing music. We got a dog, we got a lion, we got a chimpanzee, and we got an elephant. And they play music like you do. And they're out.
Everybody's one band. Would expect.
And they're out there in the world. Now, we all know the state of a lot of bands that, you know, were big in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. They're not doing so well at the moment. They're having a rough time keeping it together. You know, the world has changed, and so has people's taste in music. And so this, too, has affected the Banana Splits. So they're out there in the world trying to gig, get things going, and it just so happens they get pulled over by the police. And we all know what happens in this world when the police pull strange-looking people over. They get shot at. Okay?
Oh, my God.
They get shot at. They get arrested.
I was expecting there are definitely going to be some drugs in the car. That's just what I was going to get.
Yeah, I don't think they were going to make it out of that at all.
We spend the first part, really a big part of this, with the Banana Splits and their hijinks with the police. It opens with the dog character who's dressed in a blazer and slacks and a sweater and a bow tie, and he says, "Sorry, officer, but we're late for our gig. Can you give me directions to the Whiskey a Go Go?" And it's just And it just goes on from there. So the cops are all upset because they're like, oh no, this is a possible metahuman threat. And the Banana Splits are like, we're not a threat, we're a bubblegum pop band. But that doesn't work. They end up getting arrested and nearly shot at. They're tased, I believe, and they are sent to prison. Okay. That's where we find Amanda Waller, who, again, needs new metahumans or something there, something close to that, to go after the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, or whatever the hell these things are.
They, of course, agree because they don't want to be in prison anymore. And, you know, they figure the deal is if they can save the Suicide Squad and get them out without causing major collateral damage, she'll let the Banana Splits go. Okay, so I don't know if you in this version of the Suicide Squad, which is, I guess, similar to the movie. There's Deadshot, Harley Quinn, Killer Croc, and I think the Enchantress, if I remember correctly. They get dropped into the mountainside where the Suicide Squad disappeared. They're all geared up, so there's a lot of splash panels of them putting on like flak jackets and loading up weapons. Okay, so imagine those same characters all decked out with like grenades and machine guns and shit. And there's a funny panel where the lion actually trips and, you know, his gun goes off. They're dropped mountainside. They get separated too, but they each run into different members of the Suicide Squad. One runs into Deadshot. One runs into Killer Croc. One runs into Katana. Part of this is that there's these robots, these little girl robots that are hunting the Suicide Squad. Okay, eventually they all meet up. And they still have a mission to complete. So they each pair off and they go back into the building where these robots are from. Half the team rescues Rick Flag. The other team goes and goes to blow up the building. We have some fighting. We have some action. Harley Quinn yells out cowabunga. And they save Rick Flag. They blow up the robot factory. This is where, and so the Banana Splits earn their freedom. But the dog says at the end of this, this whole experience got me thinking, maybe it's time for the Banana Splits to have a new sound. Bubblegum Pop is history. Time to evolve. And
Wait. Can I ask, is the lisp in the book?
Yes. It is. Yeah,
I am okay. reading it as it's spelled out.
If this has already been covered, I'm sorry. I may have missed it, but I
no. I Googled and found a page and found a panel that's actually really funny.
But, all right,
I'll jump into that panel later. It's really funny.
And you know how little jail time can give a recording some artist what do you call it again? Street cred. Exactly. Colonel Flag, Miss Waller, I am asking you to be part of our new origin. And so we turn the page, and they are dressed in... and 6 months later, they are now spelling their names Banana Splits with a Z. They're dressed in prison jumpsuits. And I'm just going to read this straight up. Straight out of Bellevue, we've been walking on the dark side. Squad goals, get rich or suicide. Started out bubblegum. Now I'm going to get me some banging with the splits is lit. Because we're straight out of Bellevue. Straight out of Bellevue. Where ain't nothing ain't legal. It goes Snorky, Trooper, and Flegel. And Amanda Waller says, this is happening. This is actually happening, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh.
Whoa.
So
there's a page. Yeah, okay. So they meet. I don't know what the context is. But one of the Suicide Squad asks, speaking of origins, what's the story with you guys? And the dog responds and he says, we fold our foes to fate. and then it shows a couple of the members of the Suicide Squad just confused. And then the rest are like, no, we're kidding. We just responded to the Craigslist ad.
Wow. There you have it. Now, I want you to picture that in your mind's eye, Josh. Picture a movie where anthropomorphic dogs, lions, chimpanzees, and elephants rescue the Suicide Squad from a robot army. How great is that?
I'm that sounds like you could have just put it into the Suicide Squad movie and it would have clunked right along.
Well, we no need to confuse an already ridiculous plot line. You know, the one I just pitched is straightforward. It gives you all the action you could want without confusing the issue. It's fantastic. It's the winner here.
Noted.
Wow. Well,
put that one on the list.
But curious as to which list it's going on. Comics to read, comics to avoid. We'll find out here later, I guess.
Comics to burn.
I'll put a header on the list later.
Well, okay. Ronnie Adams, what do you think of that iteration there?
Well, I've read it twice.
You read what Mark Radulich is talking about twice?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. That's like extra homework, extra credit and stuff.
Yeah, I got bored.
Okay.
I read it the first time. I was like, you know, that was kind of funny. And then I read it again because I was like, no, that can't be right.
So you had the exact same experience that I have with the vast majority of the DC movies. Like, that was crazy bad. There's no way it was as bad as I remember. And then I watched it again. So go on.
And it was that bad.
Yep.
Wow. The more I think about it, the more I'm like, it makes me rage on the inside.
I think it's wonderful. I had a very good time reading them. Of all the stories in this, that one really was my favorite. So the Booster Gold Flintstones is a close second.
Bull crap.
Hornswoggle.
Coming up next, it's the Flintstones.
Well then, Ronnie, are you ready to go next? Would you be willing to go? All right. I'll let you bring us, since we're talking the Flintstones and Booster Gold.
Booster Gold. Okay.
Booster Gold is a highly overlooked DC character who his main thing is time travel. He is a time-traveling hero, and he has all these gadgets and everything that, you know, enhances his physical abilities and, you know, all the, you know, but he time travels. I've always enjoyed him. He got his butt handed to him when, you know, during the death of Superman, he and Blue Beetle. Blue Beetle and he used to, not the one we're used to now, Ted Kord, Blue Beetle, used to pal around together until Ted Kord was shot, and then that kind of put a damper on their friendship.
yeah, it completely ended.
Right. So I said, hey, I'll read Booster Gold and the Flintstones. Completely forgetting the wonderful time I had reading the Flintstones from DC. and all the wonderful, you know, storylines that they had in that, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And if you can't tell, that whole statement was dripping in sarcasm.
/ sarcasm.
I thought to myself, surely they won't do the same Flintstones from before.
Who's writing it? Who's writing it, sir?
Did not realize that he was going to be writing it again.
Oh, dude. That's magical.
That's awesome.
So we start.
Set yourself up for this.
Yeah, I did. I set myself up for failure.
Yeah, I did.
Scene begins with Booster Gold in his apartment talking to his little robot, Skeets. And Booster is preparing himself for a date. And in the background, we see the Ark of the Covenant because he went back and grabbed it, which he stores. Now, I will tell you this. The Ark of the Covenant is supposed to be where God dwelt, the Spirit of God dwelt. In Old Testament times, they were not allowed to touch it because if you touched it, you know, God's holiness, you would die. No, you would just fall over dead. It's not an Indiana Jones.
Oh, all right.
In fact, in the Bible, there is a story where they're carrying on sticks and somebody misstepped. And to save it from falling to the ground, forgetting, hey, don't touch it, someone grabbed, you know, tried to keep it from falling and hitting the ground, grabbed it and died.
Ooh,
they're like,
that's an oopsie.
So Booster seems to think that it's okay to store his high school yearbook in it. And other things and baseballs. And I think I see.
So he's able to open it up with no problem.
Yeah, right.
What's in the box?
He has a dodo, you know, the bird that's extinct, just chilling, you know, as a pet in his apartment. So there's all kinds of things wrong with this. But he's a time traveler, so he can go back and get these things.
Mm-hmm.
So he's preparing for a date, and he goes out to this city, this timeline, whatever. He travels the timelines and different dimensions and things like that, and time travel. He's living in Gotham. and where there are no heroes or villains. There's only one police officer that actually patrols Gotham. There's actually a kid running around as a Joker. We learned that there are multiple animals. I mean, like, all the animals are going extinct. Like, moles just went to extinct, they said. And so, you know, he's living in this time where everything is, like, gone crazy. He doesn't have any money in the bank. He can't afford really a nice meal for his date. Then when he realizes that, all of a sudden, chaos breaks out in the street because there are people running on fire. And
all right.
So there's people running in the streets that are on fire, and there is this alien race that are flying along, just killing people indiscriminately.
Please tell me it's the Great Gazoos people.
They are green with spines on their back. Things coming out of their spines.
So okay,
all right. So Gotham police officer rolls up on his little, looks like a thing that Paul Blart rides, only with no wheels on it. It's floating in the air.
A wheelless Segway.
It's Segway. Gotham police, I order you to, and he turns into a skeleton because they shot him.
No!
So he throws his date in the dumpster, and he says, I got to help here. Try not to get disintegrated. So he and Skeets decide to activate his time sphere and go back in time because they're actually looking for him. Or not looking for him, but they're looking to kill everybody. So he goes back in time to stop them. So according to Chronopedia, he says, this race of aliens have visited the Earth before in its ancient past. So they plot a course, and we go to Bedrock, the year 20,000 BC. And there is one of those aliens standing on his little thing, and he's actually preaching a message of peace. And everybody's like, oh, that sounds nice. This appeals to me. And all of a sudden, Booster shows up and accidentally cuts that alien in half.
He's gonna be the reason. Oh, please continue.
So he runs into Fred Flintstone, who gives him helps him out, picks up his time sphere and everything, and gives him a ride on his Brontosaurus to Rubble Trouble, which is Barney Rubble's repair shop. So they decide that to help him as long as he promises to leave, and they try to repair his time sphere, and they actually do. So he puts out a call to anybody that's in the space-time continuum that's listening. He gets in contact with someone who is just a few centuries away from him, and she says, if you want me to help, I can swing by. And then she gets eaten by a T-Rex. This is Dr. Cloaker standing from about beautiful Mount Vesuvius. I may be of assistance. And they ask, hey, what year is it there, Doc? He said, well, it's 79 AD. Why do you rumble screams of pain? It was when Mount Vesuvius erupted and destroyed everything. And then Crabulon from Omega G decides he wants to help, but he's at a Who concert and in the year 1961.
Mm. Oh, is this like, was this the
61, I think? I can't remember what year it was. 20th century at a Who concert, and that's where everybody died.
Yeah, that's where they trampled.
Yeah. Yeah, trampled. Yeah, so lots of little pop references in there.
Mm-hmm.
He actually gets in contact with Alfred in the year 1966, and since Batman has a time machine that lasts just this prototype for a four-dimensional transceiver, we often receive cryptic transmissions from the future, mostly something called Gilmore Girls. Yeah, so he actually talks Alfred into opening him a bank account in the year 1966 with 10 bucks in it, a savings account. So he just puts $10 into 1966, right?
I'm liking the time travel stuff here. Okay.
So they decide to go see the scientist that is living in Bedrock, and he says he needs energy, and he says, how much energy are you talking about? And he says, 5 million gigajoules. And he says, what is that in eel power? Electric eels. And he said, this is hopeless. So he goes out, he takes the alien, the one he cut in half. He takes the time, he takes that spacecraft, and he repairs his time machine with it. And they actually find out that he is the reason for the invasion on Earth, because they are, they decide, they figure out that he cut the peace-loving prophet in half, so they decide to take vengeance on it. So they're time travelers too, and then one of them asks, so at the risk of asking a stupid question, why didn't we attack you earlier? Kill the Dark One, which is Booster Gold, when he was a baby, stop him from murdering our prophet in the first place. Well, because then we couldn't avenge him. That makes like zero sense. Well, it's just that, shut up, it's theology, you wouldn't understand.
Okay.
Right. So, you know, it goes on. He actually, he time travels back to, you know, to Gotham. He brings half of Bedrock with him. And then, you know, all hell breaks loose in Gotham. And there's pterodactyls and Tyrannosaurus Rexes flying around and stomping and tromping. And Wilma actually rescues Barney and Fred in one of their cars, or and Barney and Fred Wilma's car. And they realize, hey, you know, the city's made of, what do you call this stuff? Metal. Okay, yeah, so it's made of metal. What are we doing here? So they work together, you know, to solve the trouble with the time jump. They decide that Booster decides that the best thing to do is to, since the top half of Gorak, which is the Prophet, accidentally came with them in the ship, he puts his hand in it like a puppet. And decides to deliver one last message of peace, but the puppet falls off of his hand, and one of them, you know, one of the aliens proclaims, "Now that's just rude. Prepare to die, all of you." And then all of a sudden, Krabulon, the one at the Who concert, shows up with Gorak. He went back in time and grabbed Gorak and says, "I've returned just like I prophesied." And they all decide that it's not blasphemy, that it's actually Gorak. And he talks them into being peace-loving people again, or aliens. And then he puts the time continuum back into place, puts all of Bedrock, including all the dinosaurs, back in, you know, their proper time. He goes to the ATM, and it says your remaining balance is 3.8 billion Earth dollars, because it's that far in the future, you know, and his
interest.
He goes to take the girl out again, and he's come to find out that didn't get all of the animals back in time like he was supposed to, which actually helps the Earth out, because not all the, you know, the extinct animals that are back are taking the place of the animals that are going extinct. And they go to this restaurant where they're served a giant slab of ribs.
Oh.
And the girl decides that she's going to sue Tinder. The end.
Wait.
What?
She's going to sue Tinder. I missed the part where Tinder came in. Wow. Yeah, that was a plot point.
No, but because Tinder hooked her up with Booster Gold and she didn't like him.
Oh, I get it now. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Nice. And you all may think, oh, Ronnie, he's just being funny. No, I'm not trying to be funny. I really do not enjoy this.
This was
the dumbest thing ever.
There's no comedy here.
There's no comedy here.
We've had our discussion about Mark Russell before. Could you feel his presence over that book when you read it?
Political, PG, bunch of bull crap. Just write a comic book. It's the
Mark Russell.
Flintstones, you jerk.
Mark Russell. Wikipedia, first sentence. Russell is the author of God is Disappointed in You, Top Shelf Productions, 2013, right? A modern retelling of the Bible. So the man has his motivations, and we've discussed that fun topic. So let's before we go to Judge Josh here, that sounds like a name for a great TV show. Mark Ralich, did you read this one? You said you liked this one.
I did. I thought this was great. I don't know what Ronnie's getting all uptight about.
I'm not getting uptight. It's not a good story. It was ridiculous.
Are you doing the chips again?
No.
I didn't do the chips.
There are no chips, you butt donkey. Listen, this was not a story that I enjoyed.
This is going to be a race to the bottom. It feels
if Ronnie has his way, he will make sure to bury this book. I guarantee.
I'm looking at these four, and I'm going to put numbers beside them, right? And I'm like, I'm kind of tossed up for who's getting four right now. I got two more to hear, though, so maybe.
I haven't read the other two. I actually, you know, I kind of like Adam Strange, you know, stuff I've read in the past, and I've always been a Johnny Quest fan. There's no way they can screw those two up by trying to make, you know, super, you know, preachy political, get my ideas across to you, and then ruin Booster Gold in the process. Or you know, pulling the banana splits out of their rear end and saying, okay, let's put them with the Suicide Squad. You're taking a loved childhood band, you know, the equivalent of Billy Bob's Wonderland, and you're giving them automatic weapons and bombs and saying, okay, they're actually trained in this stuff, even though they're just supposed to be a band. Let them have at it. And
yeah, that's hilarious.
I'm done here.
Crickets. Absolute crickets.
It was better than what I read, though.
Okay. Well, Josh, do you have any other commentary?
I got nothing. Absolutely nothing. I'm lost. Okay.
Coming up next, it's Johnny Quest.
Well, all right. So I get to bring my selection to the board here, and that is Adam Strange crossing over with Johnny Quest. Now, okay. I believe this is called, it's Adam Strange Future Quest Annual Number 1, I think is the actual name of the book. So we've already discussed, Josh, you said have you even ever heard of Adam Strange at all?
I've heard the name Adam Strange, but okay. I like in zero context.
Okay. Did you ever read any of 52 when it was published?
I did not.
Okay. All right. That's where I first learned, which is fine, but that's where I first heard of Adam Strange. And for some reason, prior to reading this story, I thought Adam Strange and Animal Man were the same person. Absolutely incorrect. The reason I got them confused is because in the story, or the publication 52, Adam Strange and Animal Man are stranded trying. I think they're trying to get back to Earth, or they're trying to get back somewhere, and Adam Strange is blind. But I remember that story. 52 is a great story. If anybody has the chance to read it, I would highly suggest it. They did a great job telling a very long, drawn-out 52-issue story, which was fantastic. It was like released one issue a week throughout a year. So, that being said, let me give you the lowdown on Adam Strange here. Now, Adam Strange, he's just like you and me. He's a human. He has no discernible powers. At least in the beginning, he did not. Okay. Are you aware of anything in the Hawkman universe, Josh?
Lightly. Like I know of the two primary characters, the Hawk characters, and that they're from another planet and that they're reincarnated or something. That's about as much as it gets.
Yeah. So you're describing pretty much what I've seen on Legends of Tomorrow. But well, Adam Strange has some ties to Hawkman, and the fact that as an archaeologist, Adam Strange was out doing a dig somewhere and then got zapped by this, what they call a Zeta Beam. Okay. Zeta Beam transported him to a planet called Ran. And on Ran, he befriends the Ranians. That's the name, according to this. He befriends the Ranians. And there was a Ran Thanagar war recently. That might have been something you guys may have seen on the shelves.
Yeah, I recognize those words together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So. So Adam, that's a good hit, but I mean, we have
some of those words.
Adam is out of place, you know, on a different planet. He decides to make the best of it, befriends the local people, the Ranians, and he is actually a very astute. What would I say here? He's a great strategist. How's that? I'll put it that way. A strategist or strategist?
Strategery.
But he's a great strategist. So he helps actually the Ranian people in their troubles, I guess you would say. Dons a suit and a jetpack, is able to fly around, and he has like a ray gun. But he's a human like you or me. So there you go. There's your basis of who Adam Strange is. Now, let's talk about Johnny Quest. Johnny Quest, another Hanna-Barbera property that came out in the 1960s. This was a cartoon actually based off of radio serials. Our characters here, now these are guys that I'm just going to throw out there. Clearly we have Johnny Quest, the young 11-year-old boy who, when it comes to cartoons, what I remember of Johnny Quest is it was more serious.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't your happy-go-lucky space fantasy, or it certainly wasn't Scooby-Doo when it come to Hanna-Barbera. This was, when it come to Hanna-Barbera properties, this was more grounded in what I thought was reality, where you have, I say reality, but I mean, it was taken to the extreme where there were governments involved. You had Johnny's dad, who was a secret agent or some sort. We have the Fear Agency, which is a terrorist group. I guess that you could compare them to like Cobra of G.I. Joe. And then we have Raji, who is, I think it's Raji. I want to say Raji.
Haji.
Haji. I don't have the characters in front of me. Let's click the main characters here. And
I do like how you say this is closer to reality. Meanwhile, you have a blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy who's best friends with an Arab.
That's his adopted son. That is Johnny's adopted brother, I guess you would say, because Johnny's dad actually adopted Haji Raji. I need to get these characters in front of me here. Then we have Roger T. Race Bannon, who is the bodyguard of one Dr. Benton Sequest, Johnny's dad. We have Bandit, who is the faithful puppy dog that travels with them on all their adventures. So there you go. That's kind of like the basis of Johnny Quest. Now, we get to the fun part, Josh Calandrus, where we take those worlds and we smash them together. Now, here's the thing. I thought about doing this, but I really don't know how well this is going to go, all right? But we're going to give it a shot. It may fail miserably, and I'm perfectly fine with that. If that happens right here on the Source Material Podcast, I'll be glad to say I gave it my best shot. But if it works, it'll be amazing, okay? Me and you, I know that we are simpatico on some of the stuff that we watch when it comes to TV, when it comes to movies. Our paths cross a lot, I would say. We see that we watch the same content. So we're going to start there, all right? We have Adam Strange, all right? I'm going to give you the start of the story, and then you, sir, are going to do your best to actually write this story, and we're going to see if you get it right or if you get it wrong. I'll guide you along. And obviously, goodness. if you get it right, sir, then you cannot possibly give me the number four position, because this is a story you wrote. So there you go.
What is this horseshit we're doing here?
So here you go. Adam Strange is in the midst of a 6-issue miniseries called The Death of Hawkman. Okay. And at the end of that series, he gets zapped with this Zeta beam. Now that, by the way, is how he travels to and from Earth to Ran, I guess it is. So he gets zapped with this Zeta beam that's like super powerful. And the way this Zeta beam works is you have to be at a certain spot, and he has some kind of weird affinity to it to where he knows where it's going to be at. But he ends up getting hit with this Zeta beam that transports him not to a different place throughout the universe, but to a completely different reality. And that is the Johnny Quest planet. Now, he lands in a spot on the planet that has temporarily been, I don't know if it's temporarily or if it's been like this for quite a while, but it's like the lost land, all right, or the savage land, okay? Can you see that in your mind? Can you see the savage land?
Yeah, yep.
All right. Now, what happens with Adam Strange as he wakes up, okay? Let's do it this way. He wakes up in the midst of the savage land. You got three choices, all right? He wakes up, he immediately recognizes where he's at, but he doesn't know what time he's in, or he has amnesia, or he wakes up with a completely different personality.
I'm going with the third one.
Oh, completely different. No, sir. Unfortunately, it is amnesia. As we see, strike one. All right. So, let's see.
Your story sucks, Kalanis.
I don't know. He might be able to write a better one here as we go forward. But all right. So Adam Strange wakes up and he has amnesia. He don't know what the hell is going on. Okay. Now, remember, he's in the midst of the savage land. Things are out of place here. We've got giant snakes. We've got mammoths. We've got dinosaurs all over the place. Here, flying across the sky, is Johnny Quest, his dad, Race Bannon, and Haji, and good old faithful Bandit. I've just given to you a couple tropes here. We got time travel. We got amnesia. What do you think happens when they're flying over? As they go across the savage land, or the, what it was, I can't even remember what it's called. I want to say it's like the lost land, something like that. But anyway, as they go across that, what do you think happens? Do you think, A, they see something down there? They see a man? I'll give you two choices this time because I got 50% chance you get it right. They see a man down there on the ground, and they decide to investigate, or are they already investigating potential vortexes that have been populating across the land already, and they want to figure out what's going on? There it is. He's got one right, folks. They are already investigating, and Adam Strange has popped out of one of these vortexes, and they head down to find out what's going on. And there they find Adam Strange. Now, Adam Strange, at first they're like, what the hell are you doing here, man? Now, these vortexes have been popping up all over the place. They've been bringing bad things to the land, and you certainly just came out of one. You can't be a good person. Well, if Adam Strange is able to convince him, look, you can take my ray gun. Have my ray gun. Check it out. I'm a good guy. I don't know who I am. I don't know what the hell I'm doing here. things are getting crazy. During this time, they have got to try and figure out a way to, I don't know, stop these vortexes from happening. Now, the problem is once you get into, I'm going to just keep calling it the Savage Land, okay? Once you get into the Savage Land, the only way that you can get out of there is by teleporting through a vortex. We just found out that Johnny Quest, Adam Strange, are trapped here. And now there's a couple people on the ground already who cannot leave. And they also, I think it's Ugg, who is a caveman, and his friend Todd. Yeah, that's right. Todd. Yeah, Todd. Thanks for joining us, Todd. He's a good guy. A good little kid. Anyway, he's looking for his parents who are lost in the Savage Land as well. But all right. So now that everybody's together, we got to figure out a way to get out. Here's the thing. There's a couple other people that are stuck down there. I want to give you two choices. Josh Calandris, two choices, okay? A, the fear agents show up, and they are also investigating these vortexes, and they're trapped as well and think that their only way of getting out is by using Adam Strange. Or B, the fear agents show up, and they put their weapons down, and they say, we want to join you guys, and we want to get out of here. Are they going to manipulate and take advantage of Adam Strange, or are they going to try and join up with Johnny Quest?
They're going to try and use Adam Strange.
Oh, my gosh. That's two.
Really? They're called the three agents, and they're not the immediate villains? Come on.
He's riding it. Clearly riding it. Well, here's the thing. There's a battle. We get a bit of a battle. You know, Johnny Quest and his dad, they all know about the fear agents. All right, so they know what's going on, and they don't trust them at all. We get a big battle. They aren't going to turn over Adam Strange, and Adam Strange is not going to go willingly. The next thing is during the battle, as they're trying, I think they're trying to escape because the fear agent's using some kind of weird thing to control the animals. I have no idea. But Johnny Quest and Adam Strange, they all got to get out of there. They're able to get out. But again, the fear agents are upon them. And as they pretty much capture them, we find out that Dr. Benton Quest put out a signal to another one of his local friends in the government. And I wish I could remember the name of the government agency. I can't remember it. I know he works for the U.S. government, but there's a certain agency that he works for.
Was it Homeland Security?
No, sir. It was not Homeland Security. I wish I could remember. There's a specific name for the agent. But anyway, he put out a distress call, and somehow it reached somebody. And in swoops, that's right, Harvey Birdman. He shows up, and he is able to even the playing field. And then we find out as well that there is a way to open up these vortexes. And slowly throughout the story, Adam Strange is regaining his memory, okay? And he talks about the Zeta Beam, and Dr. Quest talks to him, and they figure out that there's these, okay, A or B here. There's these crystals that line the land of the Savage Land in certain places. And that if they are hit with a certain energy, they will open up a vortex. Or B, they discover that there is certainly a way of opening up a vortex so long as all five of them fart in unison.
The first one. Not the one that involves a fart, although that is kind of how I'd prefer it to be written.
Okay, this is going off the rails. So yes, that's correct. The first one, there are these crystals. They don't know exactly how to figure it out, how to get these things to open up a vortex until Harvey Birdman shows up. His name's Birdman, by the way. It's not Harvey Birdman. Birdman shows up, and he has some kind of, yeah, just straight up Birdman.
Birdman.
Birdman. He has some kind of a power.
Harvey Birdman.
Yeah, he uses some kind of solar energy. It energizes the crystals, and voila, portal opens up. The fear agents are like, all right, see you later, bye. Thanks for opening up the portal. We're gone. Remember, they had these guys at odds, and the fear agents hop through the portal. Now, the thing is that they don't know. They can't control exactly where these portals or these vortexes will send them. On the next page, you see the fear agents running for their lives from the Herculoids. That's right.
Boom. Yes.
Herculoid, oh, shit. Reality. The Herculoid showed up in this?
Yes. The Herculoid showed up.
You have regained my interest.
Well, sir, it's for one panel, unfortunately. If there would have been a great battle, it would have been awesome. But yeah, the Herculoids are not very happy with the fear agents for some reason. We don't know why, but that's all we get to. That's all we get shown. Adam Strange, as he slowly regains his memory, he is able to figure out how to work these crystals to his bidding and creates somewhat of a Zeta beam to beam himself out of the Johnny Quest reality, all the way, all the while saying goodbye to his good friends that he just made. And that's pretty much the story. That's it.
It doesn't tell you why the beams, why any of that happened.
No, we have no idea. I can tell you that the Zeta beam that I don't know what happened at the end of Hawkman. Like I said in the chat, now unfortunately, I was at a very big disadvantage just being dropped into this story, because that's what it felt like. I didn't know what was going on in the Hawkman mini. I had to do a little bit of research, figure out what happened there at the end and why he ended up here. I just know there was, Hawkman dies, a Zeta beam hits Adam Strange, and it's extremely powerful, and it shoots him over to this reality. As to how those things pair up with the vortexes or whatever, supposedly they're similar, I have no idea. And how the crystals come into play, no freaking clue. It's like reading Revolution again. Shit. So I don't have any answers for that. I mean, if I was, I don't want to give my criticism. I need to pitch this to you as a positive thing. I'll criticize it later.
You don't have to.
Obviously, you've taken the lead on that one, Ronnie Adams.
He's my friend.
I'll do it this way. As much as I know about the Johnny Quest series and what it was, like I said, it felt like it was grounded in more of the military espionage, and we got to get here before this person gets there, and we're up against the Fear agents and their commander, Dr. Zinn. It probably felt more faithful and also continuing of that story in that book. Okay. And that's the only real justification I can give for as grounded as it seemed, because there really wasn't a whole lot of fantastical stuff going on here. If I could give one more, I'll give one more example to support why this story. And that would be, if you had Johnny Quest, of all the people that you could pair him up with, I was like, why Adam Strange? And I think the reason specifically falls with the fact that Adam Strange is just a guy, just like you and me.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we threw Superman into that situation, all these people who are, just rely on their guns and their wits are going to be really outmatched. So that was probably the best character, at least one of the best characters that fit well enough in that story to make it work.
Seems like that's a relatively straightforward story, even though the reasoning behind the Zeta beam transports was never explained.
Nope, none. And it was like, here you go, Adam Strange. All right, you don't remember what you're doing, and you regain your memory, and now you go back into the Zeta beam ether.
It just happened, people.
That's exactly right. All right.
Coming up next, it's Space Ghost.
Space Ghost!
All right. Other than that, I turn the floor over to Mark Radulich. Mark, we'll go ahead and since he's got four spots on the paper, we're going to go ahead and let you pitch number four here and see where it falls.
Well, here's the problem. I didn't really get this story. So I have the book in front of me, and this is not going to be a very strong pitch because I didn't really get what was happening. But basically, Green Lantern's out in the space and he's patrolling. And
as he's wont to do,
and he runs into one of the yellow lanterns, the one that looks like a horse.
Larfleeze.
No, Larfleeze is the orange one.
Oh, yellow's the fear. Yellow's that's right. Fear. My bad. That's right. I'm stepping back.
The one DC property I know about is the one that Mark didn't really get.
So Green Lantern's fighting the yellow lantern dude, and Space Ghost shows up. And he's fighting Zorak, and they kind of run into one another. And they're like, hey, this is my racket. Oh, yeah, well, this is my racket. They don't really use the word racket, though. And so there's a four-way fight between Gorak, the Yellow Lantern, Space Ghost, and Green Lantern. And Green Lantern gets taken down, and him and Space Ghost end up landing on this planet. It's filled with these, mechs. And they say, you are in violation of the Praetorian sovereignty. Identify yourself or face complete destruction with extreme prejudice. And they meet these aliens. This is funny. Hal Jordan says, take me to your leader, which is
good job, Harold.
basically, like, Green Lantern's responding to a distress call that came from the planet, and the aliens, if I remember correctly, is like, oh, there's nothing in space. There's nothing out there. Everything that exists exists on this planet, and you're a heretic for saying otherwise, et cetera, et cetera. Green Lantern ends up, like, using his ring. He ends up, like, getting away from the mechs.
Is there a boxing glove involved? Needs to be a green boxing glove involved.
Space Ghost shows up again, starts fighting the Green Lantern. I feel like they end up knocking each other out. Another alien on the planet. It's like an alien little girl.
Why the hell are they fighting? Space Ghost and Green Lantern start fighting?
Yeah, it's one of those, like, they don't really understand what the other one's doing there, but okay. They're both... But, you know, it's just like, you're the enemy. Well, no, you're the enemy, and I'm the good guy. And it's like, no, you're not. I'm the good guy. And that kind of...
Duck season, rabbit season.
Yeah, kind of. So this girl, like, takes them prisoner. She thinks they're bad guys because they're fighting and tearing up the forest. She takes the ring and the bands from Space Ghost. See, here's the problem. I read this and I'm like, what is happening?
Like, every single one of these stories has involved that same noise from someone.
There's a lot of talking and a lot of explaining, and they're trying to get the girl to understand that there, like, really is space and stuff in space.
This is the one story that shouldn't involve a lot of talking. They're both from space. They're both. This is the one story that naturally lines up pretty well. Flintstones and Booster Gold could probably be done with time travel, but this one, like, is damn near written for you. You don't have to explain Zeta beams. You don't have to explain why animals are walking around with guns hunting for people. You, like, this was all done so poorly.
There's something about a weapon here. That's what caused the distress signal. They realize who the real enemy is. She gives them back their weapons. Only it turns out she gave the bands to Hal Jordan, and she gave the ring to Space Ghost.
Oh,
and they both use. The other one's power is kind of badly. It's some pretty comedic stuff that happens here. They switch. They end up using their powers together to save the planet, destroy the weapon, et cetera, et cetera. And then in the final bit of panels, they take the little girl into space. And she ends up building, like, a fleet of astronauts when she grows up.
Can you fly?
And that's all I got out of this. That's why I was hoping you guys had read it, because, like,
I've read it.
Okay, could you explain it a little bit better than I did? Because I did a very good job.
I just want to chime
better
in.
Than I would have.
Really? The art on this looks fabulous, by the way.
Great.
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to figure out who the artist was, but I'll tell you right now, it looks really good.
Kind of almost reminiscent of Alex Ross.
Yeah, really? Yeah. It's got a painted feel to it, a real painted feel. And I'm trying to find the guy's name. On the front cover, we have Tenyon the Fourth, Sabella, and Olivetti. So I assume Sabella's probably the artist. I don't have a
Olivetti.
First name.
It's Olivetti.
He's the okay. Yeah, Ariel Olivetti. All right. Yep, you're right. Christopher Sabella is part of the writing team. So, Olivetti, man, I'm telling you right now.
Dude does some good art.
Yeah, that's really impressive. As for the story, I didn't read it. Ronnie, I cut you off, man. What do you have? Did you have anything to add on the story?
Oh, no. He did way better than I would have.
So it's just on, you know, a certain way of getting these two characters together, having them battle it out. And
can I just tell Josh, there's also, like, there's an extra story in here that has a Top Cat Batman crossover.
That'd be the end of mine. I read that.
I just needed Josh to know that. Yeah, that Jetson story was like, I had taken my kid to the little kitty gym, you know, and I'm reading that and I'm looking, there's so much happiness. The kids are running around frolicking and I'm reading this really depressing Jetson story. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Oh, no.
Right. It's the Jetsons. It's not supposed to be depressing. God, get your crap together, DC.
All right, Josh, you've now heard all the pitches.
Hit us with your ranking, sir.
He is typing furiously.
Shit. I was really expecting to come out of this as the Green Lantern Space Ghost thing is the clear front runner, just because I love Green Lantern and that premise, just those two characters alone makes sense. Like I said earlier, that cannot be hard. Oh man.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, this is what we've got to go with. Okay.
Let me help you. Ooh. Suicide Squad Banana Splits, number one.
That is not going to happen. Yeah, that one is probably at the bottom. Dude, like, I'm
destroyed Mark's world.
I'm split on the Green Lantern, Space Ghost, or Johnny Quest, Adam Strange being one or two, and the other two being three and four. But there is like the flimsiest of lines between all of these. Like, you could juggle these out and have them hit the ground, and I'd be like, yeah, let's go with that. I'm probably gonna go with the Green Lantern one just because the art does look pretty awesome now that I've Googled it. And yeah. It's not based on a lot. Those all sounded terrible. Seriously, those all sounded really bad.
I would love to see a Banana Split Suicide Squad movie. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, come
about.
On, dude. Give no way.
These
no
all way. Sound these no all way. Sound painfully forced. Like, I would love to know the backstory between how this was decided and who came out of it. Like, they had to have just tricked the advertisers into overpaying for ads, and everybody came out ahead on this on the money side. Because I mean,
well, DC's got a full like Hanna-Barbera universe. That was the point of, I guess, Future Quest. I don't know. I just looked at the Green Lantern one, a Green Lantern Space Ghost one, and I didn't see Future Quest listed on the front. So maybe mine was just an outlier for some strange reason. But the whole thing of Future Quest, if you Google Future Quest, they were bringing all of these properties together. I'm talking like freaking, they were bringing Space Ghost in along with all the whole Hanna-Barbera universe. They were bringing Space Ghost together with Johnny Quest, and Herculoids were going to be figured into it somehow. So there is a shared universe now, much like what we saw with Revolution, where they brought all the Hasbro properties together. They're doing the same thing with Hanna-Barbera. Of course, I don't see how Flintstones is going to affect much anything else, but we just had a story that brought DC into it. So DC is, my guess is, clearly it's a good way of trying to promote these other Hanna-Barbera titles. And then, of course, give you some ridiculousness in some form. Let me ask before we get into Josh, you got to give a final ruling. You're just gonna you got to do 1, 2, 3, 4. So you got to do that.
Okay, so Green Lantern, Space Ghost. One, two, Johnny Quest, Adam Strange.
Okay.
Three, Flintstones, Booster Gold, and four, Banana Split, Suicide Squad.
We ain't had Mark Radulich.
I got it.
Well, okay. All right. We're going to wrap up here real quick. We'll get the plugs. Josh, thanks for playing along. Go ahead, man.
So just for the record, I was just kind of Googling this and, are you all familiar with Paste Magazine? Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Heard of it.
Yeah, sometimes they do like music reviews, I think. It's kind of like just a little bit of everything. But they apparently have an article where they ranked these.
Oh, boy.
Out of 10 on a scale of 1 to 10. Nothing got under a 6, by the way. Adam Strange, Future Johnny Quest got 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Booster Gold Flintstones got an 8.2.
Mark Russell.
Sweet God, what's wrong with this?
Dude, yeah. Mark Russell. I mean, the guy is... Go ahead.
Suicide Squad Banana Splits got a 7.2.
Yeah, it did.
And Green Lantern Space Ghost got an 8.6.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now, my question to the rest of the guys here was, which one's better so far that we've read? We'll start with Mark Radulich. DC Looney Tunes or DC Hanna-Barbera?
DC Looney Tunes.
Looney Tunes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, just based on the stories I'm told, I'm going to painfully side with the Looney Tunes. Because the descriptions were better. Like that, there was some interest and optimism from you all on some of those books. But I had a good time with any of this today.
Well, I liked mine. I just didn't understand the Green Lantern Space Ghost one, so I didn't really want to pitch it. I was
Which
just going.
Is even more infuriating because that's the easiest one to make work. That,
if it would have been written well, Mark Radulich, you wouldn't have had to struggle. You know what I'm saying?
If this weren't a piece of Shit, it would have been great.
Yeah. That would have been a lot better had it been written well.
You would have been able to be like, oh, yeah, listen to this fucking story. But yeah, I mean, well, you can only do so much with bringing a cartoon property together with a comic book property. You'd think it'd be pretty easy, but because they both, you know, almost, well, no. Sometimes
any thoughts on the next DC cartoon crossover? Any guesses?
What's that, on the next one?
Yeah, I mean, let's just random guesses here. I mean, they seem to be on a bit of a tear here.
Man, yeah, no kidding. Boy, we covered...
Well. Go ahead. Who do they have access to? I mean, there's certain things they just don't have access to.
Well, they got WB money, so anything not Disney, right? I mean, they're not going to do a crossover with a Marvel-owned property, so, I mean, that's pretty much it.
I don't know, maybe horror monsters? There's plenty of horror monsters under the Warner Brothers catalog.
Yeah, I don't know what that is at all.
Oh, you know what? You know what they should probably do? The DC versus the Monsterverse. So it would be like King Kong, Godzilla... I think that's Warner Brothers. Yeah, hang on, let me look.
All right.
They could do that. I mean, they've done this.
Is nothing sacred?
Yeah,
like, no. Hey, here. I got a profit involved. I've got a perfect cartoon property that they can team up with, and we can cover right here on Source Material. And they only have to answer one. Only one question has to be answered. And that one is, Ronnie, what's your favorite cartoon?
I don't want to say it because I'm afraid somebody will hear me.
Yeah.
Oh, because all we want to do is ruin his childhood.
To be clear, yes, the Monsterverse is a Warner Brothers connected universe. So, yeah, coming into the DC Comics near you, it's going to end up being Godzilla and King Kong and Mothra and all that shit.
Yeah, let's call that as our prediction.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. They're doing Kong on the Planet of the Apes, so he's getting around.
God dang it.
Are they?
Yes, they are. Kong on the Planet of the Apes. Really? Not a comic. It's going to be a comic.
When is this happening? Because I have to read that.
Of course,
you do, Mark.
Masochist.
Let me look here. Kong.
Because you like terrible stuff, apparently.
All right. I'm looking up real quick. Just real quick. Boom Studios.
Yeah. Kong on the Planet of the Apes, number one, comes out in November.
Oh, boy.
Oh, Boom Studios is doing this? Can I please read this?
The damn dirty crossover event you demanded, Ronnie Adams. Following the events, I demanded the opposite. Following the events of the first Planet of the Apes film, 1968, Dr. Zaius and General Ursus lead a small group of soldiers to the Forbidden Zone to destroy any remaining evidence of Taylor's time among them. To their surprise, they discover a Kong. Now they must venture to Skull Island with Cornelius and Zero to discover
Kong? The truth. There are multiple Kongs?
Yes. Didn't you see the movie?
Silence.
No, I did not. Yeah, sorry, I was on mute. No, I did not.
Now they must venture to Skull Island with Cornelius and Zero to discover the truth, but they may not survive the deadliest journey of their lives, Ronnie Adams.
So, okay, all right. Mark Radulich, if you're interested in covering something like that, I know I'm up
Hell
for
yeah.
it.
Hell yeah.
Ronnie Adams would be up for it. Does it say how long it's going to be? I mean, when it comes to issues, does it say
15
it's like
a, issues?
No.
3 trade paperbacks.
And a little bit of Ronnie Adams' soul.
They'll be $7 each issue, 15 issues.
Well,
hang on.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it in the source that I got.
It's art for some reason.
That would be that'd be insane.
This beautifully painted work in Kong on Planet of the Apes.
Dude, stupid, we covered...
Stupid.
We covered...
All right. It's 6 issues, by the way.
6. All right. Well, that's manageable. We did Tarzan, Planet of the Apes, and that was what, 3? Or was that 6?
It was 6.
It was 6? Okay. Silly. All right, let's get into plugs, ladies and gentlemen. Again, thanks to the imitable judge, Josh Calandra for being here tonight and hanging out with us, playing a fun game with us. And to my guests, Ronnie Adams, Mark Radulich, thank you very much for bringing your favorite comic books, the comic books you were assigned, and to the table.
The books that you were
forced
to
read. How dare you call this my favorite?
So let's get into plugs here. Let's start with Josh Calandra, sir. You know, we get you on here when we can. I know you're a busy man, so you got anything going on you'd like to plug, sir?
I'm watching a lot of college football, and I'm pumped for hockey, and that's probably about as much as far as it goes. Oh, I'm living closer to Chicago now, so I might be able to watch some of those games.
Oh, nice.
Hockey. Nice.
Hockey. Yeah, no, I'm in the middle of college football, so...
I know that's your favorite season. You had the opportunity. You had to go. You went to what game here this past Saturday?
I went to Marshall at Cincinnati. So I've been to 3 games already. So I did Ohio State at Indiana. I did Ohio at Purdue, and I did Marshall at Cincinnati. And I've got another 3 games planned to go to, plus the Big Ten championship game.
Ooh, very nice. Very nice. All right, then we'll move over to Mark Radulich. What do we got going on? What's the schedule, sir?
All right, for those of you listening live, tomorrow night we are doing the much delayed, but finally getting to it, On Trial, Ballistic X versus Sever. On Wednesday, Jesse and I are going to try to figure out how the hell we're going to cover Primus, the Desaturated Seven.
Bringing you another book to you.
Yeah. And then on Thursday, we're going to do TV Party Tonight, Hannibal Season 1. For those of you who are listening on Columbus Day, when this drops on the network, we've got a pair of Blade Runner shows to bring you. We've got Damn You Hollywood, Blade Runner 2049, which is getting pretty good reviews. The Metal Hammer of Doom will review Cradle of Filth. And then we're going to do an On Trial for Blade Runner.
Ooh.
I don't know which version of Blade Runner we're going to be reviewing, but
can I piss you all off and say that I've never seen the original Blade Runner?
Either I'm right there with you, dude.
I've never seen it either. And the funny thing is,
I'm going to do that soon, though.
When I mentioned it to Robert Winfrey, he was like,
"Mark,
which version of Blade Runner are you going to watch?" And I'm like, "There's multiple versions." Though, he's like, "You have no idea."
Director's cut. I've always heard that's been lauded pretty heavily. Right? Is that right, Ronnie Adams?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, anything else there, Mark?
No, I'm going to go to bed.
All right, buddy. Thanks for joining us.
Good night.
Good night. Ronnie Adams, Under Screen My Boy podcast. So, Ronnie Adams.
Yes.
What do you got planned, man? What's people going on?
In the next week or two, we will be recording again because all systems are go as far as technical difficulties, blah, blah, blah. It's all done. We are up and running again. So it will be the triumphant return of the Screaming Boy podcast. So we will be up and running here soon. Discussion topic TBA. But it will be something
TBA. Good. I was like, what is that?
To be announced.
Gotcha.
We've missed quite a bit. I don't want to go back and go over what we've missed, but we will go over some new stuff. You know, the upcoming, probably, I want to talk a little bit about Stranger Things before the new one comes out. It is the month of October, so we've got some Halloween stuff that we want, you know, make a big deal out of Halloween. I do, at least. I love Halloween. So we've got, you know, we got some, you know, stuff brewing, and we'll be back and better than ever, hopefully. If not, we'll just be the same and still kind of suck. But no, we won't. We don't suck. I recently was a guest on a podcast called The Exhaust Port.
Yeah.
Which is a podcast all about Star Wars. It was while I was at the Greensboro Comic Con. And so if you look up The Exhaust Port, it's a fun little podcast. If you're a Star Wars nerd, you'll love it. These guys know their stuff, he knows his stuff. And we talk about, the movies, what was our fate, out of the six, or out of the original three, which ones were our favorites and what was wrong with the prequels, you know, the usual stuff with that. And then we get into a little bit about the extended universe and, you know, the upcoming Obi-Wan Kenobi movie.
Oh, yeah.
Whether they should do a Boba Fett movie. I really want them to do a Lando movie. That I think that would be really good. I think that's in the works or something. I can't remember. And actually, I pitched a little bit. I have a story that I would love them to do because I don't see Star Wars going anywhere anytime soon. Them taking a break. We talk about that. They need, so one of them said they need to take a break. Well, they don't. because I can hear the cash registers going on that. But
every December makes sense to me. I mean, you got a year between each anyway.
Exactly. We talked about how good Rogue One was. So we really want to see that, you know, the Han Solo movie, the Obi-Wan movie, following suit with those. One of my favorite books, which is now not considered canon, but still a great book to read, was called Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina. And it's different stories of different characters in the Mos Eisley Cantina. I really wish they do. I know it wouldn't be a Netflix series, but I really wish they do a on-demand series. If Disney comes out with their own on-demand service or whatever, I really want them to do something like that. Take the Mos Eisley Cantina, take these guys that you see in the background, and just give them a story. And then you could do different genres. You can do a little bit of horror, you know, something like that. You could do comedy. You could do action. You could do a heist film, things, or heist, you know, show thing. You know, just different genres, you know, mixed in with that, just to switch it up a little bit.
Yeah, that could work. But
we talk a little bit about that, and, you know, or I mentioned that. So it was a good time. I just randomly approached them at the Comic-Con in Greensboro and said, was talking about their equipment, and mentioned that I had a podcast of my own, and they invited me to sit down. I sat down with them for quite a while and talked to them, and it was a lot of fun.
Very cool.
I represented the Radio Lichen Broadcasting Network and the Screaming Boy podcast and Source Material at the Greensboro Comic Con. So I told everybody about it. I actually got to meet the writer. Well, he's one of the writers of The Stuff of Legend, which is one of my favorite books. Mm-hmm. It's a story about this young boy who gets kidnapped by the Boogeyman. He's a lot more evil than he sounds, and his toys come to life because he takes such good care of them, and they love him. They rally together and go into that world, like a toy world, to rescue him. So it's, you know, his stuffed bear turns into a real bear. The little wooden Indian princess that he plays with turns into a real, you know, the toy soldier that he has turns into a real soldier, you know, things like that. And they just go into this universe and to rescue him. And it's pretty sad, you know, some points of it, you know.
That sounds pretty cool, actually.
It's a really good read. I enjoyed it. He actually signed my book for me. I bought an omnibus from him while I was there because I didn't have a physical copy of it. It was all digital. Mm-hmm. So I bought an omnibus from him, the first omnibus, and he signed it for me. Super nice guy, Brian Smith, and really nice guy. So I want to plug that book a little bit for him. You know, if you haven't read The Stuff of Legend, please read it. It's great. I think it is, at least.
Okay.
And so we, you know, a lot of cool stuff there. So we have a lot of pictures up on the web. So if you go to Instagram, Screaming Boy Podcast, you can see the, you know, pictures of all the cosplayers, of, you know, Artist Alley and the vendors and everything like that. That was, you know, it was a really cool time. It was the very first one in Greensboro. So it was really cool. Participated in what they call the Nerd Slam, which is trivia, where you pick your own subject that they choose questions from. So I did things like Masters of the Universe, Star Wars, the first, you know, three, you know, four, five, and six, Marvel. And they said, what about Marvel? And I was like, I don't know Marvel. And they were like, really, the whole thing? I said, anything but the cosmic Marvel. I don't know anything about the cosmic side of it. And then they were really upstanding because I got my final question correct and was supposed to advance, and they had the answer wrong. And when I pointed it out to them, they were super apologetic about it. And they the first prize was a weekend pass to the North Carolina Comic Con in Durham, which Rob Liefeld is going to be at. So they made it up to me. They're sending me to the Fayetteville Comic Con, which is the largest in North Carolina. And they gave me a weekend pass for that. And I'm actually going to be in the Nerd Slam, the 2-day Nerd Slam there.
All right. So
Instagram, we're on Twitter at Screenboy PR. And if you look us up on Facebook, it's Screenboy Podcast.
I was definitely checking out the pictures of the cosplay. Some very cool cosplay down there. So
they had some really good costumes. They had some, I don't know if you'd call them professional cosplayers or what, but
experienced? They had
experienced cosplayers there. A couple of people that's, you know, that was their company. The 501st Legion was there with their Star Wars cosplay. They had a 7-8 foot Optimus Prime.
Jeez.
And he was amazing. He had to have everybody stand 5 foot back because he probably couldn't see us and would smack us in the head with his rifle. But he was straight from the cartoon Optimus Prime, and his chest opened up to reveal the Matrix.
Ah, yes, that's so cool.
And
my chest does that.
Yes, it does. I've actually seen
it. It ain't the Matrix quite... leadership, though. It's just a...
No. There's like...
It's like some, a ball of hair.
Old hamburger wrappers and a couple empty bottles in there. But
halogen light bulb.
Halogen light bulb. It just buzzes all the time. No, that's fluorescent. Fluorescent light bulb. So we had a lot of I had a lot of fun. One more thing and I'll shut up. Ran into a guy that was just looking to give you stuff away, and I got two original G.I. Joe figures complete, not on card, but they were complete.
Now you say complete, what does that mean? Does that mean it had all
they
weapons?
Had all their weapons and their backpack.
Okay.
All their accessories were there. So I got Alpine and Dusty. And then I got a complete with stickers and weapons and missiles and everything, the Cobra Ferret, which is the ATV.
Ooh.
And there was a couple of vendors there that were selling each of their G.I. Joes for like anywhere from $15 to $50. Vehicles were going anywhere from $30 to hundreds of dollars. And I got all three of those things for $17.
Nice. That's a good score, man.
Yeah, you can definitely find a lot of cool stuff at these cons. If you find the right guys, you can clean up. So, got to see some, you know, really cool artwork, things like that. Okay, I'll shut up now.
Ronnie Adams, he hasn't had a podcast for a while, as if you couldn't tell.
I want to talk.
He wants to get in what he's done. Well, ladies and gentlemen, you can go over to the Rattle Itchin' Broadcasting Network Facebook page to stay up on top of all the great podcasts that we have to offer. We do MMA. We do wrestling. See a lot of great wrestling content over there from the W2MNet.com guys, Sean Garmer, and all the great contributors from over there. Give us a lot of podcast content. We just like Mark said, we do TV. We do metal reviews, comic books right here on the Source Material Comic Book Podcast. So there's something on there for somebody, just about darn near anybody that can enjoy. I want to give a shout out to Remy if he's still watching. I know Remy checks in with us every once in a while. Just got a message from him there from Dueling Ogres. They just went to the Parkersburg PopCon here last weekend, so I'm sure they may be releasing some kind of content possibly. A couple of the podcasters got together that I know, which is Dueling Ogres, and then the guys from What's Going On, Joel Gant, the guy that did the Remix Recap with me here in the archives where we talked about Remix Throwdown for the Pound 16 that happened here in Marietta, Ohio. Some great wrestling content on there if you guys want to check that out. I'm a big fan of Remix. They bring in a lot of great talent. I know Josh Calandris loves wrestling. Can't get him to stop downloading these wrestling podcasts.
I'm probably going to head to bed.
Well, you can follow me at Stiznarky on Twitter, at SourceMacCast if you want to follow the show's Twitter. I think that's about it. I mean, you guys just go in the archives, check it out. Type in Rattlitch. That's all you got to do on any podcast, program, app, whatever, and you're going to find Rattlitch and Broadcasting Network and all the great content that we have. I'm ready to go to bed. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. Our good friends, Josh Calandris, Mark Rattlitch, who is probably snoring away right now, Ronnie Adams, who hopefully will be having a podcast here pretty soon for the Scream Boy, and...
Oh, definitely.
It's happening. It's a happening. It's a crappening. Ladies and gentlemen, have a good one.